Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 108 of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here with you today. We have a fantastic show lined up. I'm super excited about this guest, Dave Ankin. From A&E Toymakers will be joining me here in just a few minutes. We'll get to that interview here very soon. But I just want to say thank you, as always, to everybody who listens in every day and joins us, who supports the podcast, who downloads, who follows us on social media. All of those things are super important. And if you aren't subscribed to the show, I would strongly encourage that you do. If you head over to Apple Podcasts and just look for the Open Mic Podcast with Brett Allen, you can subscribe and you can listen at your own leisure, really. That's super fantastic and it definitely allows you to enjoy the show at your own pace and you get the episodes first before everyone else. Like today's guests, you get to listen to it before everybody because it'll just download automatically when you subscribe. Also, and we talk about this a lot, but if you could just head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts as well and leave us a kind rating and review, it really does help and keeps the show rocking and rolling. And yeah, that's it, really. Oh, and head over to our Facebook page as well, Brett Allen. And on Twitter, it's Brett's Open Mic. And of course, I think I said this already, but Instagram, it's at the Open Mic Podcast or theopenmicpodcast.net. So many things I'm throwing at you right now. I apologize, but we definitely don't want you to miss out on everything that we have coming your way. And we've got some amazing guests. I'm going to be interviewing Jennifer Briney tomorrow. So I'm excited about that. That will be a lot of fun. And I'm super excited to talk to her. She's huge. She's got a fantastic podcast, Congressional Dish, and we're going to talk about that and just her background and all sorts of fun and exciting things. So definitely don't miss out. Lots of big guests and lots of fantastic topics are coming your way. So without further ado, we're going to get to Dave Ankin right now. Again, he is from A&E Toymakers, and I've been looking forward to chatting with him for a long time. Dave, welcome in, sir. It's good to have you here today.
Man, thank you guys for having me.
We were just talking pre-show, and you're actually filming right now. I don't know how much you can get into, but what are you currently working on right now?
You know, at the moment, I'm doing an exhibition car. I'm in episode 6. We're doing 8 episodes this year, and yeah, so, for me, it's really an aggressive, mean, nasty little exhibition car, sort of a slash drift car exhibition car. It's, pro charge, big horsepower, big tires. It's going to be a lot of fun. So.
That's awesome. So let's talk about your background a little bit. And you've done some pretty interesting things. You were a stuntman for Universal Studios, I believe. You did Batman. You did Waterworld. Let's talk about your background and just how you got started in this whole industry.
For me, all that stuff was fun for us. I was fortunate enough at a young age to get involved with Six Flags was my biggest one. And what was fun about Six Flags is, as a kid, you go in and you get to play Batman, or you get to, do the, you know, the cowboy shows. It was a lot of fun for me moving in and being a, you know, what they call a stuntman. I, you know, realistically, they had a couple actors. I had one guy that was a stunt guy that always took the fall or the hits, and had a lot of fun as a kid, made good money, and you get to run around and say I was Batman, so it was fun. So.
And then how did you get connected with the Waterworld show and all of that sort of thing as well? So,
you know, the difference with when you're doing anything in theme parks is it's always the same stunt coordinators running around, the same people bouncing from theme park to theme park and playing. And that was so long ago. I'm an old man now, so it's funny when I think back, you know, what I'd give to go back to the earlier days and really play with some of that stuff. So now it's, you know, it's so much more complicated than it was back then. But then it was just theme park after theme park. You're always looking for something to do for the summer. So,
okay. So had you done anything like that before then, or was this something that you had just kind of gotten into for the first time?
No, you know, yeah, to be honest, it was just one of the things, you know, when it started with Batman, you know, I mean, literally they, back when I was growing up, everybody that would show up were these little, they were a lot shorter. I happened to be 225 and 6 foot tall and rode the snot out of a motorcycle. So they were looking for a guy that rode a motorcycle that was 6 foot tall, that would fit into a Batman suit. And I just seemed to fit the bill. And then, you know, it sort of went from there. So.
And how long did you do that?
Oh, my God. I don't know, 5 years maybe.
Oh, wow.
It was a riot. I mean, what's 5 summers? You're a kid, you know. It was just absolutely around 4 or 5 years. It was a good time. So.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So how did your love for motorcycles and cars, how did that all start for you?
You know, it started as a kid. My dad always had hot rods. He was always building hot rods. And it just grew from there. It's no different than my 13-year-old now. I mean, I think it's actually what you grow up into. You know, we'd go to the racetrack, and my dad always tinkering with something in the garage. And I always had a motorcycle, a go-kart, or something to play with. And, you know, the downfall is you could never afford to buy a real high-dollar car. So at a young age, you learned to build that car or that bike, or you couldn't afford to go buy a new motorcycle. You had to buy two or three and make one out of it. So just what I grew up into.
That's awesome. So I want to talk about the show, Toymakers. If you haven't seen it, it's a lot of fun. And some of the cars that you get into and the things that you do are just unbelievable. It's crazy. The creativity. How did the show start for you and how did it get developed? And what's the whole process for that?
You know, everybody asks me that question. I don't know exactly how it unfolded. All my friends or people that I've met through the years have done some sort of television, whether it was the old Chopper days or some of the car shows or, you know, I mean, I know planners that did shows. All my friends have done some sort of show somewhere, somehow, and I just never really was interested in doing one. And then as I got older, developing a business, so to speak, you had to develop something. What's a better way to advertise your business than a television show? It's an hour-long commercial, basically, for your shop. So it's really how it started. And then I wanted to do a show that, yes, we do OEM cars. We would take them, throw a set of wheels, tires, brakes, and some stickers on it, not to build. And then we do, like I'm doing now, I'm in the middle of 2 one-off builds where we build the chassis, the windows, the bodies, the, you know, the A-arms, the gas pedal, every inch of the car we make. And that's insane. It takes me 18 months, 2 years to do one. But in saying that, when we're done, we have something really crazy and over the top. So,
mm-hmm. So when you're going to, you know, build cars and put something together, like, what is your process, your vision on how you approach a major project like that?
You know, I'm probably different than most. You know, do we use CAD and SolidWorks, all that stuff? Absolutely. Probably more so now than we did in years past. But for me, I'm still an old guy. I like setting four tires out there on the pavement. I got to look at it. I start moving it. You know, I got a couple mock-up seats. I start moving seats around. Motor platforms around. I have a vision in my head, especially as a kid, to get a very vivid imagination and just bring that vision to life and figure out not only to make it look cool, but to make it truly functional. Most of my stuff, well, 990% of my stuff is driven all the time and driven hard. We don't, it just doesn't look cool. It's drivable and we drive them hard. So it starts with four wheels on the ground. I figure a set of tires I want to use or the size, and then just start laying it out, measuring and really, really old school style. If I can't see it in my head, I can't build it.
I love that. So have you ever gotten to a project and said, I don't know that we can do this, this is too difficult, or you just don't let anything stop you and you just go for it?
No, you know, there's no such thing as can't do, can't have, can't be. In the big scheme of things, anything's achievable. It's time and money. I usually don't start a project till I have it built in my head. So, like I said, I'm doing two projects this year that truly been in my head for years, and you slowly build them over time. And I always laugh. You know, get some of my employees see in 2D. I see everything in 3D. So as I'm looking at something, I can tell you what it's going to look like. So once I have it built in my head, I've already got 75-80% of it figured out. Now, that's not to say that you're in the middle of the project, you don't run into big hiccups, because you do. But, you know, I have an extensive toolbox, a wealth of knowledge in my toolbox. I can make a phone call. Somebody in my toolbox, and I call my toolbox my friend, somebody in my toolbox knows the answer. Or we can put our heads together and come up with that answer. I have yet to run across something that I haven't been able to get through or figure out. And I'm not saying that's always the case, but for now, we try to do things that are achievable. I love it when somebody tells me I can't do it. We make it happen.
So there's no question that you love a good challenge. I like that. That's awesome. And I think that applies to just anything in life, you know, as far as being an entrepreneur of sorts, I would say, as far as building cars and that sort of thing. What advice would you give to somebody who perhaps wants to do this for a living or just work on a car, period? What would you say to them if they were somebody that was young and didn't have a lot of experience doing this but wanted to give it a shot?
You know, you have to love what you do. If you don't love it, don't do it. I mean, I do what I love. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but it's the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. You know, if you really are passionate about it, do it. It doesn't just mean this. It means anything in life. So, to me, I'm not schooled in this stuff. I grew up in it. My dad did it. All my friends do it. You know, it's trial and error a lot of times. It's my whole life has been, you know, building stuff and breaking stuff and figuring out what works and what doesn't work my whole life. I mean, so it's just a natural fit. There's a million guys just like me that are as good or better. But we're all passionate about what we do. If I had to do this for a job, if I had to come to work and had to answer to somebody, I probably wouldn't do it. But because it's me, because it's my passion, it's my childhood dream, it's a dream come true. So if that's how you feel and that's what you think in life, that this is a dream and a passion, and realize everything in life is hard. If it's easy, it ain't worth having, I promise you. It's hard, and if it was easy, everybody'd do it. So nothing's easy, but it's worth it in the end.
So if you weren't doing this, do you see yourself doing something else, or is this pretty much just it for you as far as what you do?
This has been going on a long time. I've been slowly building up to this. It's been a lot of years in the planning, to get to my end game. I'm now, you know, in my 50s. My end game is to end with this. And if my son takes it on and goes forward with it, great. If not, great. But I wanted to retire into this where I could do this as an old man and enjoy life and enjoy what I do. So that's exactly what I'm doing. So this is my end game, and I hope to be dying here on the car, tinkering and playing. So
has your son shown interest in this as well?
He's amazing. I don't see it because he's my child. I'm humbled. If my son you know, all you ever hope is a true man in my mind is to have your son be better than you are, and he's more inclusive, he's talented, he's great with his hands, he's humble, he looks you in the eye, yes sir, no sir. He's a great, great kid, and yes, I mean, he absolutely, and differently than me, he's very opinionated, he has his mindset of what's right and wrong. That's what makes you great, not following somebody else's footsteps, not being the follower, being the leader. And he's that guy. I mean, he potentially could go way past anything I've ever done, and I hope he does so.
That's awesome. Now, you talk a lot about your father and how he inspired you and just really was a role model for you. I want to talk about that if you're okay with that, as far as like in what ways did he inspire you and sort of mold you into being the man that you are today?
Listen, I could only hope to be the father that my father was. My father to this day inspires me. He can drive anything. He can fix anything. I don't care if it's a bike, a car. I don't care. He can drive it. He can work on it. He can fix it. He can build it. My dad is amazing. But more so, he's an amazing man. He's a man of integrity. He works so bloody hard. He works harder now that he's retired than he ever did, you know, when he was working. So, you know, honestly, for me, it's just integrity. It's you know, owning up to when you're wrong. It's owning up to when, you know, it's putting the work in. It's doing what you need to do. My father's the epitome of that. I mean, he's a man that I could aspire to be and hope to be, you know, one day. So, it's the classic Hallmark movie, if you really think about it. He truly is that man. I mean, I know it almost sounds cliche, but it's not. I can call him, and I do. I call him. My dad lives 12 hours away from me, and we talk every other day at least, and bounce ideas off talk. We're like best friends, and that's hard to have. I hope and pray I have that with my son now. I get up every day with my son. I'm the one that brings him to school. I get him ready. He works for me in the summer and on the weekends. And I hope I have that relationship with my son as we grow older. But that's, you know, it's really the Hallmark movie of fathers, in my opinion. Was he strict? Absolutely. Did he ground me all the time? Absolutely. I deserved it. Thinking back, he's like, oh my God, my poor dad. Like, but in saying that, nothing but respect. I mean, Matt, if I could laugh the man years, I didn't even know how to put it into words. I will have succeeded as a father.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what advice would you have for young dads out there who want to leave that legacy for their child and have those same desires and passions to have those kinds of relationships?
You know, for me, I'm in my 50s. I have a 13-year-old. I waited till very late in life to have a child. For me, having a child it was the biggest plus and still is today in my life. So when I had my child, he became a part of my everyday life. It wasn't like a burden. It wasn't like everything is revolved. If I have to go do something, it's not a burden because I have a child. My child comes with me or is a part of what I do. So for me, it's just getting engulfed in what's important to him, involving him into my world. I don't know if there's a right or a wrong when it comes to raising a child. I have one. I couldn't tell you what's right or wrong, but I couldn't tell you that my relationship with my father is amazing. My relationship with my son is amazing. And I made a bunch of mistakes as a kid, so trying not to make them now. I don't ever want to forget what it was like to be a kid. My son still thinks he can pull the wool over my eyes, and I laugh. he'll never know what I know. It's like, and you know, I don't ever want to forget what it was like to be a kid. So I just think it's important to be involved with your kids in any aspect. I don't care what it is. It just doesn't matter.
So. Yeah, I love that answer. And I started late as well. I'm 44 and I have a 4-year-old. So I'm right there with you as far as, you know, having children late in life. But I love it because it just brings this, you know, sense of pride that you have the opportunity to just mold a young life. And I can only hope that my son, too, will have the same interest, you know, as far as I do and that sort of thing and those same desires. And I like your story about, you know, him trying to pull a fast one on you, but you're like, no chance, right? There's
no, it's funny to me. That's what he wanted for Christmas, and he wanted two more monitors for his one monitor for his gaming system in his room. And he, I heard him tell his mom want to help me with homework, and I looked at him and said, Brian, he's like, well, Dad, I said, you're talking to me. It's like, you know, help with your homework? Three monitors? Let me tell you about your gaming. You don't got to... Can't tell me that. Come on now. I get it. I promise you, I get cool stuff. You can't tell me it's for your homework.
That is funny. I love it. I absolutely love it. So, outside of cars and that sort of thing, what do you do? You know, obviously you have family time. Are there any other hobbies or interests that you have besides working on cars by chance?
You know, cars, bikes, trucks, all the above, motorsports industry in general. But for me, it's, you know, it's family, it's other kids, we do a lot with you know, the handicapped kids, less fortunate, terminally ill kids, anything we can do, and really honestly, to grow with industry that I love. I love doing events. I love doing events. Any type of event there is as far as motorsports industry. Because as we grow up, the youth of today doesn't think like we do, as grown men. So, you know, I hate to say it, each Carney drivers, for instance, they're dying off faster than the new ones are buying, the young kids are buying them. So, I fear for the industry, other self-driving cars, others, you know, all that stuff is awesome, and I understand the growth of technology, but I don't want my love of my passion to die. You know, it's, as we get older, I've watched, you know, the ATAC tape players go away. I've watched VHS go away. I watched the day of a cell phone and of a TV. You know, we had a little bunny in it. I remember the first time I saw cable TV, it was one channel. It was called HBO. So that's all fantastic, but, you know, we're going to grow ourselves right out of the industry that I love. And so, really passionate about trying to keep that alive and bringing it making the youth today understand what we love. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one final question. I know we got to get you back to filming there, but I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on social media today and just the exposure that kids have to that. And what are your thoughts on that with your son? You know, you'd made a comment about the gaming and whatnot, but I was curious to hear what you had to say about that.
You know, there's pluses and negatives of everything on the planet. I think if you use it, to me, I was really against social media for myself. It's a necessity for my business, so I understand it. As a child, or as a cell phone giving it to a child, or any of that, I never grew up with that. It was totally absurd to me.
Sure.
But if you turn it into a positive and into a good and use it for the right avenues, I monitor everything Braden does on social media. I really want to know. There's so many people that do the wrong thing. So I really, it's my job to make sure he's doing the right thing and people aren't doing something negative and wrong. And, I think you could make it a negative and I think you could make it a positive depending on how you roll with it.
Sure.
Me personally, I've taken something that I never understood and don't accept because we didn't have it. And I had to turn it into a positive so my son grows up with the same luxuries as everybody else and the same pluses, but make sure that it's a plus, not a negative in his world. You know, mine for that matter. If something happened to my son, I would be absolutely, it would ruin my life and devastate me forever.
Sure.
So, I'm not saying social media is bad, but it could be if the wrong people doing the wrong thing. So it's something, I think it's a necessity. I think it's going to be there forever. I have to accept it, and I have. And But at the same time, he's 13, and it's my job to make sure that the right things are happening, the right people. I control who talks to him, who doesn't talk to me, especially with a TV show. He's seen on TV now. You get people reaching out saying the things that are very wrong and very rude and very, it's unacceptable. So I try to shelter him the best I can, but still have him the same luxuries that all his friends have.
So what does he think about Dad being on television? What is his perspective?
He could care less. He's on TV. I have him in four of the episodes this year. He could care less. And I was worried about that, three, 4 years ago, because it can ruin a child. The ego can really ruin a child. He could care less. He's coming in, he's making his few dollars an hour, and he's all excited, and he's working, he's made some good friends here, and, he likes the filming side and the editing side and the working with his hands and making stuff on the machines. The TV is just a, because he doesn't watch TV ever. Uh-huh. I mean, my son has a TV in his room that doesn't go on, ever. It's absurd. It's almost surreal. He doesn't understand who and what he's becoming. We go out to dinner and somebody will go, oh my God, it's the toy maker. Oh my God, it's Brady. And they'll come up and he'll go, Dad, who is that?
Yeah, you have to probably protect him on a certain level because you probably have people that want to come up and take pictures. And
that's where social media, it's a necessity. But it's also it's scary. So
I get it. Have you ever been out with him and people want to take pictures, and you're like, not right now. I've got my son with me, or do you just kind of roll with it?
No, unfortunately, we signed up for this. I don't ever want to. Fans make us who we are. So he's always right there with me. I'm very, very conscious of our son, but it happens all the time, probably more so than I realize it's going to get worse. So yeah, so you always got to take care of me. You can never say that now. I don't ever want to be rude. I've dealt with some celebrities that were that way. I don't ever want to be that guy. But at the same time, I do have my son with me, and I'm very cautious, and I make sure that, but at the same time, it's a good educational tool too, how to be observant, how to watch, sure, how to know what's right or wrong. Everything is a training tool to me for my son. So
that's fantastic. So season 3 is coming up, but for those who may not have watched the show or want to learn more about you, David, how can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. We're on Amazon. We're on iTunes. All the platforms are coming shortly. We've been on the last couple of years. We're all over YouTube. We're in a bunch of different countries. We're coming out this year. We're really excited. We're on History this year, starting in February. And we're on FYI, so it's 157 million homes, a big deal. Very, very excited. The guys at Andy Networks have been absolutely amazing. My team here has been amazing. So, all the platforms, YouTube's got a bunch of stuff out there, and just love what we do. So
that's awesome. Well, David, I'm excited for the next season. It's a fantastic show and a lot of fun, and also, I just appreciate the advice and wisdom and experience you've shared with our listeners today on parenting and just kind of combining it all together. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you guys for having us.
All right. What a fun and fantastic show, Dave. Looking forward to season 3. It was a pleasure chatting with you, sir. Thanks, everybody, for listening in, for joining in, for being a part of this fun little show. And more episodes coming here very soon. Until next time, have a fantastic day. Cheers and be well.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.